Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at The Dr. Derry. That's D-R-D-E-R-Y.
To see and share our amazing animations and find out more information about us, the show, as well as links to our social media, go to noisefuzzleshow.com.
We are grateful to our sponsors, including Access Health Louisiana and the End the Epidemic Initiative, who are working to bring equitable health outcomes to everyone they serve. Hope, any last words?
Stay well out there, folks, and continue taking steps to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, getting adequate sleep, and seeing your healthcare providers regularly.
And protect yourself and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine and booster, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. Remember, health is a human right.
Portland, Full Strength Community Radio. This is Kabaka Pyramid representing from Kingston, Jamaica. Baby Rock family, you don't know.
Tune in to KBOO every fourth Friday of the month at 8 p.m. for Squirrel Snow, the show where we broadcast galactic awareness, animal awareness, where we have fascinating conversations with movers and shakers in the fields of galactic awareness and animal awareness, and we play music that can raise our frequency of consciousness. Yeah, that is Squirrel Snow every fourth Friday of the month at 8 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And today I am Annie Warmke.
Okay, and today I will agree that you are. And we're going to be talking about challenges women face in agriculture, or, and this is where I usually throw in some sort of attempt at
please.
A silly line. But I decided, okay, you'll be happy. I thought, no matter what I say, I'll be in trouble. So I'm just leaving it at that.
And okay, now you're really in trouble. You were discriminating against us again.
Well, all right. Whatever. Okay. Well, we're joined today by Stephanie Enloe. And Stephanie is the recently promoted to Director of Programs at WFAN. And WFAN stands for Women, Food, and Ag Network.
Agriculture.
I looked at their website. They only had it as ag. I thought that might just fit the logo. Anyway, Stephanie... Stephanie, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what WFAN is?
Sure. So, yes, Stephanie Enloe. I am the Director of Programming for WFAN, and I started in mid-January, so still fairly new to the role. WFAN, also sometimes called WeFAN, also sometimes called WFAN, depending on who you talk to, but I like to say WFAN. We are a national community of women and non-binary folks who are building a socially and ecologically just food and ag system. That's our mission statement. And so within the sustainable agriculture world, we really see ourselves as connectors, educators, storytellers, and community builders. So we run programming intended to create spaces where women and non-binary people can learn from each other and build relationships. And I'll talk more about some of that programming later. Would you like me to talk here about some of the history of the organization? And
no, current we would like.
No, we don't like history.
Wait, so I'm a storyteller, and I actually have been involved as a disclaimer anyway, and am involved and a member of WFAN, and was involved in the storytelling project, which I highly recommend everybody go to WFAN.org and look it up, because we all need to be doing a great job at telling our story of our work and our life. And I just really would love to hear more about what got you to the place in Iowa that you wanted to come back and work for WFAN, all those years in between. What were you doing, and how did you get to this place?
Sure. So I grew up in Ames, Iowa, and I always thought that I really wanted to not be an adult in Iowa. So now I'm living back in Des Moines and have come full circle to just being very ready to have roots in the ground here. But I got interested in agriculture and food systems work when I was doing my undergraduate at University of Iowa. And I think in large part because I saw the food system as this place where all of these big issues that I was concerned about in terms of social equity and environmental issues were really converging. And there also seemed to be in the ag space and in the food system space, at least, you know, kind of in my like naive 19, 20-year-old mind, some fairly concrete answers or solutions to dealing with multiple big issues at the same time. So while I was there, I helped start the University of Iowa Student Garden and also worked for this great farm called Ecolective, which is maybe like 20 or 30 minutes from Iowa City, where University of Iowa is located, and started to, you know, learn more about growing things and have my hands in the soil and figure out how good that felt. And then I spent about a year and a half in Tanzania after I finished my undergrad, which is really a story for another time because we only have so many minutes here. But then when I moved back to the U.S., I was interning at this small, diversified farm. And I had hoped to be there for about a year and really learn how to farm and see if that was the life that I wanted. And it was just a disaster. This farmer was not prepared at all to be an educator, a mentor. Well, yeah, honestly, a farmer too. Annie, as a goat lover, you would be appalled by some of these stories of my time
there. I hear
them
all the time and see them, so probably not. It's just upsetting.
Well, could I back you up? Just, you said a diversified farm. Could you define what that is? I think I know, but let us know.
I think about it as a farm that's growing multiple different types of crops and incorporating livestock into the cropping system, if you will, right? So at this farm, there was some pasture that had some fairly like diversified mixes, although mostly alfalfa, and there was supposedly some vegetable production, and there was a small goat dairy. So they had multiple types of systems going on that they were trying to integrate to some degree. So that's what I think about as diversified. And I was mostly involved with the goat dairy side of the operation.
Okay, so you said this thing was a disaster. In what way? What was going on there?
The farmer was, we'll say, going through some life stuff that had him quite distracted. I don't know. It was terrible. He was not in a place to educate, we'll say that. And the farm was really falling apart at the seams.
But you know, it seems like that's a really important part of your story, because it showed you what wasn't possible. And
exactly.
And also the tremendous need there is for women in particular to be brought into, you know, being counted in the USDA systems, and also having mentorship so they actually can learn how to bring those systems together so they create a real making a living at these diversified systems. So if one system goes away, we say we've got lots of baskets with eggs in them, so when one basket goes away, we have the other baskets to make up for everything, so we don't, you know, lose the farm kind of thing. And that sounds like that's sort of a transition thing then that happened for you.
You know, it really was, Annie, because I left feeling quite discouraged about, you know, my ability to learn about farming in an environment that didn't feel patriarchal, which you just pointed out, and exploitive. And so that's what sent me into my master's degree in sustainable ag, because I had kind of, I was just feeling discouraged about becoming a farmer, but I knew I wanted to stay involved in the food and ag system in some capacity. And so then I went the academia route instead, right? And so then that's what sent me into that master's degree in sustainable ag.
You know, one of the things that I also learned, which brings this up, is you blaming yourself, saying, you know, maybe I can't learn to do this, instead of looking at the system and saying, it's so broken, I can't fix that system, but maybe I can learn how to create some new ones. And I saw this happen when I was trying to organize Women Grow Ohio Farmers. We were going to have a day where you could visit the different farms and learn from women what they were doing. And we put something on Facebook, and we had 400 and some responses within 24 hours. And we were so excited. And so 17 women came forward to open up their agriculture business. And then about 2 weeks later, we started calling and saying, well, we want to help you with the news release and help you with the day, organizing the day. And some of the women said, oh, we can't do it. The men that work with me or my husband said, you are not doing enough to have a day that people come and look at what you're doing. And that was discouraging, really discouraging.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask. You know, obviously you mentioned about patriarchal, and I'm trying to tiptoe through this without getting myself in trouble.
Oh, come on.
But I'm wanting to use like masculine and feminine without talking about male and female in this example. And it seems to me farming is a very feminine type occupation. You know, it's those things, at least I stereotypically think of as feminine in nature. You're growing, you're nourishing, you're nurturing, all of these kind of things. Is that something that you're seeing, where we try and put this kind of patriarchal template over top of a thing that just has to be feminine by its very nature?
Kind of. You said kind of patriarchal.
I guess I would draw a distinction between kind of the gendering of, so masculine or feminine, the gendering of some kind of activity or way of being versus the patriarchy, which is, you know, a structure that has for millennia advantaged, we'll say, cis men. Are you familiar with the term cis? So that would be like men who are born as men and identify with whatever, you know, dominant form of masculinity might be popular at the time. So, yeah, I don't know. I would hesitate to call any activity kind of inherently feminine or masculine as a queer person who also is, you know, like gender queer and we'll say gender queer. I think that the distinctions that we draw around feminine versus masculine are quite arbitrary and can really lock us in to a certain way of being that might not feel natural. So I totally hear what you're saying there with the idea of nurturing and growth being kind of traditionally associated with femininity. And I would push back against that and ask the question of what would happen if all people, kind of regardless of gender expression and where they place themselves alongside some kind of, I guess you could think about it as a continuum of feminine to masculine. What if nurturing and the growing of things were just considered an inherent part of being human, regardless of gender? I'll separate those things. It's not so much an answer to your question as a reframing of it, though.
Well, I don't disagree. The thing that I think about when I work with women as a mentor and doing consulting is that what we're trying to do as a culture is to say that agriculture is more than just growing a row crop. Mm-hmm. That it is about giving life, of nurturing life, and that's the soil, the air, all of the components. And I don't know why we have to make it a gender-fied mm-hmm. kind of thing. But I do think that we have to look at it as we are giving life. And that's been the problem. We have to separate ourselves from this system that's completely broken and very destructive. And that's mm-hmm. what I really like about the work of WFAN, if we can kind of walk back to that. Before we get mm-hmm. to break, and then we can break in.
Well, why don't I give the break, and then we can focus a little bit more on that.
Right.
I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
Thank God.
Thank God. And today we're joined by Stephanie Enlow, and she is the Director of Programs at WFAN, and talking about, I don't know what we're talking about. you guys tell me what we're talking about.
That's funny. I love seeing you like this. It's really nice. Uh-huh. Thanks, Stephanie, for helping me. I think what we're talking about is women in agriculture as an industry, and and we have some notes that Stephanie and I came up with. And so if you want to jump in anytime and ask a question.
Okay, let me ask the question, because it seems like this industry, and agriculture is an industry, has been co-opted by the kind of agribusiness world, and the government is very much in support of this, and the personality of the industry, as I think of it, is very... would be very against women and people who are not considered, as you say, cisgendered. You know, I can imagine someone who identifies as queer in the culture of the farming community would have a really tough time. I mean,
we're not even counted. You know, women, it's only since 2017 women were counted on the agriculture census, because there was a spot to count us. So the rest of us, if we're not in that woman with a guy category, we don't even get counted, Jay.
Okay, so Stephanie, am I being unfair to the agricultural industry? And if I am not, what are you doing to correct this massive injustice?
No, not at all unfair, Jay. So yeah, we can think about both kind of the like cultural challenges that women, non-binary folks, queer people, Black, Indigenous, and other people of color run into when trying to be involved in, you know, the growing of good food, right? And so some of those issues are cultural, right? So it's showing up to, you know, the coffee house where all the farmers gather in the morning, as a woman, for example, and wanting to sit down at the table and talk with the guys about, you know, cover crops. And everyone, all the guys, immediately changing the conversation away from farming to, for example, like something that they think would be appealing to a woman.
Gossip. I can tell you right gossip now. Or
what's going on at church or whatever, right?
Yeah.
We have lots of anecdotes and stories of that kind of cultural exclusion. Or, you know, I was reading an article this morning that was an interview with a queer farmer who works in New York. And she was talking about how, you know, and she farms with a couple of queer Black women as her farming partners, and who I believe come from the South. And they were talking about, you know, going to the county fairs, and the county fairs still allow people to be selling, you know, racist memorabilia such as Confederate flags, right? So how does that become a space culturally as a woman, as a Black person, as a queer person, that you would ever feel welcome and like you want to enter, and where you can get information and fellowship? So that's part of the issue. But then there are structural barriers as well, right? So we think again about discriminatory lending practices. It's only been a few decades that women have even been allowed to have credit in our own names, right? And you think about all
the 70s. Since the 70s. Yep.
That is not that long.
And maybe you have more you can say on this, but where we don't sit at the table for decision making, we are not really a part of the USDA. And that's who makes the rules. And we're not a part of Arthur Daniels Midland or DuPont or any of these other countries, big countries, probably they are. Commodity.
The nation of DuPont.
That's right. And Monsanto. We're not a part of any of the decision making. We're just an afterthought, really. And dismissed because we don't seem to make enough annually when they do the reporting now. That, you know, in Ohio, we make something like $4,500 a year in our work as in agriculture, and the men make $47,000 or something like that. And so somehow we're not even a part of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. You know, speaking of the USDA or, you know, some of those more structural barriers, Annie, you see, like you mentioned, women were not included in the ag census until recently. And now we know that about a third of primary farmland operators are women. We don't have a number yet for how many non-binary farmland owners there are, as far as I know, certainly not in the ag census, right? We know that the USDA participated and still participates to a great degree in discriminatory lending practices that between, I think, 1910 and I want to say mid to late 1990s led to the loss of over 12 million acres of Black farmland. I think there's a recent study that came out that shows that discriminatory lending and some of those other structural barriers for Black farmers led to the cumulative loss of about $326 billion of wealth among the Black community. We have stories about women farmland owners or women landowners walking into NRCS offices and being asked for their marriage certificates, right? So,
you know, I've experienced all that sitting on the Farm Service Agency board. And the discrimination came all the way from the top, calling women farmers and administrators horrible names or acting like the word lesbian, which who knows if they knew if the person was that or not, but as a cuss word. And I finally, you know, decried, this is a hostile work environment for me to sit here. Anyway, so we all know it's broken. Like Jay and I talk about every time we do a podcast, that all the systems are really broken. But if we come back to WFAN, and that's the group that I'm keen about, I think we have some ways to address some of these discriminatory issues, and not necessarily we're going to change the USDA, but we can change how we operate. And I think that's what WFAN's really about, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, I guess I'll say like five buckets of work that I'll list, and then I'll talk more specifically about two of those buckets. So we have our Harvesting Our Potential program, which is a mentorship program for aspiring and beginning farmers. We have Women Caring for the Land, which works with women and non-binary landowners to help them take conservation and climate change resilience action on their land. We have Plate to Politics, which is a program that we just have not the staff capacity to invest in a ton, but the idea is to activate women in ag to really raise their voices in policymaking. Growing Community Resilience, which is kind of a monthly get-together where we bring in speakers and have conversations and digest some of the really sticky issues that are facing us in food and ag systems, especially when it comes to thinking about anti-oppression work. And then we have our conference, which I'll just make a quick plug before talking more about a couple of our programs. So, so our conference is coming up in the first weekend of December. It will be a virtual conference, and we don't have registration open yet, but stay tuned for that. The theme is Seeding Community, Revolutionary Healing Through Cooperative Models. And we currently have a request for proposals for anybody who would like to do a workshop session. Those are open as well. So Annie, thank you for submitting yours. I think Annie will be one of our presenters at the conference this year, which I'm very excited about. But yeah, for anybody
just
else
to
who
say, I'm going to be talking about how to have an internship program, because I'm really, really, really hyped on getting other women in agriculture to be mentors and provide mentoring and internships. So I hope you'll join us. WFAN, WFAN.org. Sorry, I had to get that in there.
Thanks. Yes, and it's the perfect segue, actually, to talk about the Harvesting Our Potential program, which is one of our flagship programs. It's actually one of the first programs that we started as an organization. And that links aspiring and beginning women and non-binary farmers or ranchers with experienced mentors, women and non-binary mentors who, you know, own and run their own farms and ranches and can provide much more targeted and positive experiential education for our mentees. And so that program has mostly for its history been centered in Iowa, although we now have a couple of very wonderful mentors in Ohio. Annie is one of them, and a mentor in the Chicago area. So we're expanding our reach there. Let's see. Yeah. Do you want to spend a little more time talking about mentoring now, or should I give a quick overview of Women Caring for the Land before we dive more into mentorships?
I would like to hear more about the Women Caring for the Land, but I want to say about the Harvesting Our Potential that if you are a person in agriculture listening to this, you know, we'd love to have a conversation. In Ohio, especially, we'd love to have a conversation about how you could get more involved. So I gave the pitch.
Yeah.
Through WFAN.
Thank you.
Is that through the website there?
Yeah. Yeah.
WFAN.org?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes. And you can find a page there dedicated to the HOP program. And we will be accepting applications. Well, we'll be more actively looking for new mentors actually through the fall, because we'll be looking to do our mentor onboarding and training process kind of mid to late winter, probably around February, and then start linking new mentees up for the spring, which I know it's only September, but that's actually coming up very rapidly. So if you're listening and you're interested in becoming involved as a mentor or as a mentee, please reach out, and you can find my contact information at WFAN.org, or you can email me at Stephanie at WFAN.org.
So we're going to run out of time, but if you could just give us a little synopsis about the Women Caring for the Land.
Absolutely. So Women Caring for the Land, like I said, is a program that brings women landowners together to talk about conservation, climate change resilience, soil health, and think about how to work with their farmer tenants to get more stewardship practices onto the land. Annie, you were talking earlier about how much women are really kind of pushed to the side and invisibilized within agricultural spaces. And that's very much the case with a lot of the women and non-binary farmland owners with whom we work. So these are people who aren't necessarily involved with the actual farming of their ground. It's often row crop ground that they own. And they'll be working with a farmer tenant who maybe has been farming, like maybe they inherited land from their dad, or maybe they own land together with their husband, and maybe they haven't been all that involved with actual decision making for that land, but they feel a strong connection to it. And so they have these tenants who may have been, you know, working the ground for decades and have strong opinions about how it should be farmed and don't want to try something new like a cover crop or, you know, no-till. And so we support women to learn more about those types of conservation practices, and then to develop some skills for working with their tenants to really push them to make sure that they're being good stewards of that farmland.
Okay, well, thanks, Stephanie. I'm going to have to cut you off right here. No. We're out of time, but people can get more information at WFAN.org. So you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our guest, Stephanie Enlow. Thank you very much there, Stephanie. And we want to thank our always non-discriminatory Emmy Award-winning producer, Adam Rich. And we want to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother,